for the first time in 5 months. Hey, hey! Welcome to another edition. I think this is still going to be called Across College Lacrosse, and I'm still Chris Ostremski. That's a different theme song. Still the same fun podcast that you know if you have subscribed to it or if you have unsubscribed to it, and then all of a sudden you see this come up. Please resubscribe. That'd be great. I'd like to pick this thing up again. On this show, we will be talking to Cleveland State head coach Andy German, the second head coach in Cleveland State history, replacing Dylan Sheridan, a program that we have come to be very familiar with over at College Cross since they became a thing in 2017. So Coach German, a very good interview, former Villanova assistant, former Villanova Wildcat athlete, St. Joe's Prep head coach before he went to Cleveland State for a year. So this is really a second head coaching gig of his career in college or high school. And he opens up about, you know, coaching and playing and, you know, learning from other coaches and Coach Sheridan and a bunch of other things. So you stick around for a few minutes as I go through an update on this podcast. So last time I talked was 5 months ago, March. And it was a little bit too, honestly, I'll say this, it was a little bit too much for me. I was biting a little bit too much than I can chew. I had this, I had ESPN work, I had College Cross writing work, Crossing Broad stuff. And, you know, with ESPN wanting me to do a lot more lacrosse, and also the bracketology post I wanted to get a head start on, I think I got a very big head start on that, maybe like a 3 week period, which I'm fine with. That was pretty accurate. This took a backseat, and I don't really blame myself for doing that. I think I know my limits. You have to know your limits, and this was one of my limits where I'm like, all right, maybe we cut this off, and then we go to do other things, and such as that. So picking this thing up, I want to make this more of an interview-based podcast to start. So we'll be talking to some lacrosse personalities, lacrosse coaches, maybe some players, we'll see, which is something I have done before that long five-month hiatus. But a little bit less of my takes and my opinions, unless I can find a co-host, which is still open. So if y'all want a co-host, let me know. I'm fine with doing it alone myself, too. But I think the chemistry of a co-host is better than not having a co-host. So that is where we stand. Fall ball starting up. Maybe we talk to the new head coaches. Coach German is one of them of Cleveland State. There are nine others, or I think like eight others or seven others, whatever. There's a couple interims that became full-time coaches, Peter Burke, Holy Cross, Mason Poley, Quinnipiac. A lot of interesting candidates, Jerry Byrne, Harvard, Andrew Baxter, Fairfield, Andrew Stimmel, Marquette, Rashad DeVoe of Hampton, and Anthony Gallardi at Stony Brook, and a few others, Andrew Whitley at Bellarmine. Felt really crazy. Joe Amplo at Navy. I think that's all I can think of right now off the top of my head. There could be maybe one or two others I forgot. But it was honestly for this summer, along with that, and then, you know, Chris Gray to North Carolina, Chase Scanlon to Syracuse, and Chris Brandow, Nick Grell to Maryland, and, well, George Reichling's also, I think, gets a big boost to LIU in their first year as a program, and a new one. Have not tweeted it out yet. Tate Cotone, former Hopkins midfielder, going to Hofstra. Big boost for the Pride and their offense, which needs a little bit of a boost in that CAA, that uber-competitive CAA. It's been a wild summer, and I can't wait to see, you know, what happens in the fall. Maybe see a couple practices here and there that are close by. Maybe talk to some of the coaches and maybe see some scrimmages, but, you know, once we get to September, when college football starts and basketball starting and hockey starting, we get a little bit closer to the start of the 2020 season. And I think next season, 2020, will be fun to watch, whether it is a competitive team like Syracuse trying to get to the Final Four, or even someone like, you know, even Wagner or St. Bonaventure or a Utah improving or seeing what they can do to improve, or even a High Point that, you know, stunned a lot of people last year. What can they do in 2020? They still have Asher Knowlton, but they lost Jim Troutner in goal. how they respond. And hopefully we can get some more games that aren't on a Saturday afternoon. Space it out a lot more. That way more teams can get more people's eyeballs and attention, whether it is streaming or on TV. Because I think if you are in an 18, look, sometimes it might have to be a weekday game, and some coaches don't want to do that, and some ADs don't want to do that either, just because school. But you see that happen with some MAC teams. You see that happen in college basketball. It's the norm, and I think if teams decide to make that part of the norm, I think that might help them get noticed as a program. Enough of me talking. We'll get to the Coach Andy German interview shortly, but before we go, please subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, maybe Spotify. I don't know where we're on there. Wherever you get your podcasts, you should be able to get Across College, Across SoundCloud, Anchor, 5-star review. Follow me on Twitter at Chris_Jast. Follow College Cross on Twitter at College_Cross. Like us on Facebook. If you want to follow us on Instagram, by all means do so. We don't really post a lot there. But it should be a fun fall with a lot of content, especially with the Decade in Review series that we're doing. Jake and Ryan have done a couple podcasts with best teams, best games. They have a few more coming. But without further ado, Cleveland State head coach Andy German. And joining me right now is the new head coach at Cleveland State. He's starting his fourth year with the program. It's Andy German. And coach, first of all, congratulations on getting the job. And for you, at least, how's it leading a Division I program? You know, it's a few weeks that you've been the head coach and interim head coach, but you're leading this program, and it's one that you're very familiar with.
Yeah, and, you know, first, Chris, thanks for having me. It's, you know, it's been a hectic few weeks, but a lot of fun in a lot of ways. And, you know, really kind of the next phase of this is getting our guys back on campus here. And so, you know, really as a program, we can all move forward and move on. And in terms of what's been going on, you know, when Coach Sheridan left, you know, I never kind of stopped working in terms of running the program, obviously with the hopes of getting the job here. And, you know, so there was never a real transition period. Now, obviously once things become final, there's a bit of a transition, you know, but it's been a lot of fun. The support, you know, from the administration, from Coach Bertram's, you know, Maddie, who just got promoted, within, has been fantastic. And obviously my players, everybody, you know, reaching out, and whether it's a text or a phone call, it's all been really, really positive.
And the guys get back sometime later this week. We're recording the 19th. So fall ball is just right around the corner for you.
It is. Yeah. And that's such an important time for us. Even, you know, obviously we go into this year four, with our first group of seniors, you know, but it's somewhat, much of it is about acclimating the new guys, creating an identity for this year's team, because every team's going to be a bit different from year to year. You know, even though we don't really lose, you know, guys, because we haven't had any seniors, you know, every team's a bit different. And so I'm so excited to watch, you know, this group that started out as freshmen now be seniors and take that lead, you know, those leadership roles and run with it. And you know, obviously excited to be the head guy and be leading the ship here, but those guys who are now seniors, you know, they will play a huge role coming up here.
So let's begin with your journey way back when you just began college at Alfred, and before then, actually, you were a 4-year guy at Radnor. You're from the Radnor area, and recently, tragically, Peter Sampson, one of the really well-known people in terms of Philly lacrosse, tragically passed away over the weekend, and you kind of knew him a little bit. Just describe to the people who Peter Sampson was and how big did he make of an impact on your life, and especially in the lacrosse aspect of it.
You know, wow, it's you know, I got the call the other day from my father, and you know, Coach Sampson, it was there from the start. He was my first youth coach, you know, coming up through the youth program in Radnor, and he was the guy. And if it was Radnor lacrosse, it was, you know, it was Peter Sampson, and the two were synonymous over the years. And he meant so much to so many people. You know, I'm not totally sure to, you know, how to put into words the effect he had on my life, other than the fact that I don't know that I'm in this position without him, without the love for the game and having the program in Radnor. You know, that was him. And so, you know, to lose him is just so incredibly tragic and sad. And I've known his family for years. My parents and, you know, my dad were heavily involved in the Katie Sampson Festival from the start. And so every, you know, throughout the year, they'd all have their meetings, they'd have dinners. And so I've known Coach Sampson, you know, it wasn't just in the youth, but, you know, he's kind of seen me grow up in the lacrosse world. And he's always, you know, he always knew what I was up to. He was always curious. He always, you know, had something to say to me, you know, from a joke or, you know, nagging on me from years past. But, you know, really, when you think about Coach Sampson and lacrosse in that area, and you know it well, you know, he's one of the pillars. You know, he's on that Mount Rushmore. You know, I think of him and, you know, probably Coach Leahy and, you know, from LaSalle, and Coach Nostrant. And, you know, I don't know, there's one more spot, but those are the guys when you think about Philly lacrosse. You know, their impact is, you know, felt, you know, far and wide. And so I'm, you know, it was a tough phone call. My dad was really close with Mr. Sampson. And so it's, you know, it's been a tough couple days, but I know the community back there will all get together and really celebrate his life as he would want. You know, he wasn't one for people being down. He always, you know, enjoyed a good laugh. And I know the people back in Radnor will do that for him.
And I should say this, as a former explorer and going to LaSalle for 4 years, we had the chance to go to the Katie Sampson Festival all my 4 years at LaSalle. And it's, if you haven't been there and you're from the Philly area, I would recommend you go there once or twice or however you want, at least once. Great festival, great lacrosse, high school lacrosse in the area, and also supports a great cause in that aspect. Back to you. So after Radnor, you went to Alfred University up in, you know, I'd say southern tier, western New York area. And you spent your first 2 years there. You were a really good player, Empire A player. But then you transferred to Villanova. And, you know, a lot of players transfer within their first or second years for a lot of reasons. And, you know, really, looking at it, this was your first time away from home, which for some can be difficult. I had a little bit of trouble when I was a student at Syracuse. But, you know, what drew you back home to Villanova, and what was, you know, what did you like about Villanova that made you want to transfer there?
So the 2 years at Alfred were great, a big time learning experience. And you're right, it was a bit of away from home and things like that. So you know, the transition, you know, like for a lot of guys and girls, right, it's always a bit unique at first. But I did kind of settle in, but you know, an opportunity to come back home, an opportunity to get an education at Villanova. You know, Coach Marks was still the coach there. So him and Coach Corrado and, you know, all the pieces kind of fit in terms of coming back, and giving the Division I thing a shot. I didn't do the recruiting and it was obviously very different back then. I didn't do the 205s. I didn't do champ camp. I would go away for summers. And so I never really gave myself an opportunity to do that. And so the chance to come back and give the Division I thing a shot, I played with, you know, some unbelievable players. My time at Radnor, you know, Colin Cecchio went to Rutgers and Scott Cahoe went to Georgetown and Chris Early went to Georgetown. And, you know, obviously the year above me, Xander Ritz went to Maryland and Danny Broman went to Yale and the list goes on. There were some great players. And so I wanted to, you know, I was always able to play with those guys. And so I wanted to see if, give it a shot. And I had to come back and, I had to walk on to the team and try out. And that was stressful because I hadn't had to do that, for a couple of years. And so, it all ended up working out really well for me. I was obviously very, very fortunate to have Coach Marks for a season, and then Coach Corrado took over my senior year, and it was a really good experience. I'm really lucky that I was able to do both, and it gives me a unique perspective now on the other side of the desk about, you know, the Division I world, the Division III world. I've obviously played in both, and I've coached in both worlds, so a bit of unique perspective when it comes to some of the recruiting stuff and what it's like to be a coach now.
So you mentioned as well, it was a smooth transition, I'd say, from Coach Marks at Villanova your junior year to Coach Corrado. And, you know, with this transition, it kind of reminded me a little bit about, you know, with you guys, with Coach Sharon and then right now to you. How smooth was that transition while you were at Villanova?
It was fairly smooth. What I can remember of, you know, back in those years, it seems like forever ago. But, you know, Coach Corrado was around in a similar fashion that I was around with Cleveland State. And so, you know, he didn't have to change a ton. He obviously knew the players. He knew the administration. He knew, you know, how Villanova worked. And some of that is very similar to what I'm going through now. But Coach Corrado was great. He was great. You know, he was still juggling the full-time teaching gig, along with being a Division I coach, which was crazy. And as I do this now, I'm even more impressed with how he was able to juggle that. And it's just really impressive. And, but the transition was good. Obviously he brought Simon Connor on, and Coach Connor has been there, you know, since then. And so, integrating Coach into the staff. Now Simon played at Villanova, and you know, for some injury purposes, had to stop and started coaching in the area. But Simon knew Villanova, and he knew some of the guys, and he knew what this was. And so that transition, from what I can remember, was pretty flawless, and really worked out well that senior year. We had a pretty good group of guys, and you know, probably looking back, underachieved a bit. But that wasn't, you know, that was our fault, not Coach Corrado's fault.
So after you graduate, you get into coaching, take a Division III job at Susquehanna for a couple seasons as an offensive guy, recruiting coordinator. Then you head back to Villanova with Corrado as your head coach. To start, when did your interest in coaching kind of begin? And did you do anything while at Villanova as a player with any of the coaches to get a head start in your career?
So I actually, you know, so Coach Moan at Susquehanna actually coached at Villanova with Coach Marks, and that's how I actually got in with Susquehanna there. And as I was, when I transferred, I had lost a few credits along the way, and so I had to take a fifth year, and so that was the 2007-08 year, and so I was actually working in commercial real estate that year, and I just, it was right as kind of the financial world was collapsing, and it just wasn't what I wanted to do. But I always had a passion for coaching, and that really started my days at Radnor, working with Coach Buzza and Coach Slate and those guys. And we would, you know, draw stuff on the board, and we would watch film with Coach Corrigan, and they were just some of the best moments and some of my fondest memories. And then, you know, obviously getting a chance to work with Simon just for a year, obviously a really, really creative guy when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. And Villanova's success offensively is, you know, year in and year out, they're always, you know, giving people headaches. And so to learn from him, and then when I was doing the real estate thing, I wanted to get back into it and figure out a way to get back into the lacrosse world. And obviously at that point it had to be on the coaching side. And so I started poking around some job openings, and I was using Coach Corrado as kind of my guide there. And he gave me a call and said he was sitting at a field next to Coach Moan, and he had a job opening, and kind of the rest is history in a lot of ways. So really very, very fortunate that, you know, you see what a small world it is that, you know, they sat at that field together, and, you know, I was able to kind of start my career there with Coach Moan.
Now, as a coach at Villanova, you spent 4 years there from 2011 to 2014. You had some really good players. Ryan Karalunas as a senior, John LoCascio, Kevin Cunningham, John Clue when he was early on, John Bedursky, Jack Curran as well when he was early on. You know, who was your favorite to coach, if you had any, and even to just talk to as just a student athlete?
Oh, man, I'm going to get – you're putting me on the spot here.
I only ask the hard questions.
My favorite to coach. Favorite to coach. My favorite to watch operate just as a person and the way they went around about their business was Brian Karalunis. And that was, I just got a year with Brian, but the way he carried himself as a student athlete was just unbelievable. And obviously he's still playing today. I was able to watch him yesterday on the when they were playing the Whipsnakes, and he's still out there and he's living out in California. He's got a law degree from Stanford. I mean, he's as good a human being as there is. And so that was really fun to see him not only just be the best player in the country, but he was also a finalist for a Rhodes Scholarship. And so that was really impressive to watch. Some of the guys to be around, obviously those who know Kevin Cunningham, Kevin's never walked into a room silently. He's always got something to say, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. To see John LoCascio and Chris Piccirilli and Chris Conroy kind of grow from their roles as just kind of watching as freshmen into really, really, really good players and really, really good student athletes was a lot of fun. I took a lot of pride in that, seeing those guys grow and really flourish at, not just at while at Villanova, but obviously John and Chris Piccirilli played at the next level. And so I was really fortunate that the kids I was able to be around at Villanova were super. And I heard from quite a few of them in the past few weeks, which was always nice.
Now, as a coach and having experience with me with myself at Syracuse, I would see Coach Desko and Coach Donahue, Coach Rogers, kind of interact with some of the other coaches, and specifically the soccer coaches, because they were right next door. You guys had Coach Talley, football, Coach Wright with basketball. Did you guys really just interact with some of the other coaches, maybe outside of those two, with some of the other Olympic sports? And did you guys, watch each other's practices and take some notes to see what you guys can do differently?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was one of the best parts about being at Villanova, was some of the people that were there that, as a young coach I was able to learn from. And, to see, I could step right outside our locker room and see football practice going on and see how that machine kind of operated. And it was so impressive. They got so many guys and so many coaches, but it was all very organized. And speaking, being able to talk with Coach Talley on different occasions was great. And then obviously Coach Wright was there, and everybody wants to talk to him. Everyone wants to pick his brain, but he was always very supportive of lacrosse, which was great. And one of the fun things that we had at Villanova, we had lunchtime hoops, and so every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at noon, coaches, faculty, staff, would all meet in the Nevin gym, and for an hour or sometimes longer, we would play hoops, and the games were intense and they were a lot of fun. And as kind of quirky as it was, we have a little banquet at the end of the year with awards, and just a real nice way to interact with people and obviously get some exercise. But also I got to know Coach Dunleavy, who's now a Quinnipiac. George Halkovich is one of Coach Wright's top assistants now, but back when I was there, right, he was working his way through the ranks. And so to get to know these guys was a lot of fun as a young coach. And you'd pick their brain and you'd ask them different questions and you'd bounce things off of them. And those relationships have lasted, and I really appreciate those times.
I think the big question here is, how are you in basketball against the coaches?
It depended on who we play. I enjoyed when it was some of the older staff, when the basketball staff would show up, I'd usually be one game and I'd be on the bench for the rest of the hour. But again, it was a lot of fun. And some of these guys that they were on Coach Wright's staff, they're so good at basketball, and someone just in really good shape. And it was fun. I'd have my moments, few and far between, but right, you need to hit a couple shots and you'll come back the next day. But yeah, it depended on the group. But yeah, it was fun to have those guys there, just not from a basketball perspective.
Absolutely. Now, Coach Wright, really good at basketball, but he's also got a sense of fashion. Did you try to get any fashion tips from him while you were at Villanova?
Tried and failed.
Oof.
Part of it is that we're, being outside, for most of this, what we refer to as the spring is it's freezing out. And so, the opportunities to put on a suit were few and far between. But yeah, he's certainly made a nice niche for himself in the fashion world. And I'll just, being out in Cleveland, right? Same idea, right? Nice puffy coat, nice hat, pair of boots, and that's how we go to work. But
You could take the Joe Spallina book, textbook. He wears a suit every game, and he's outside.
he does wear a suit every game, and more power to him. He's a sharp guy in a suit as well. I prefer the puffy coat. Let's just say that I'm more of a puffy coat guy, and Coach Wright, he looks good. Coach Spallina, those guys, they know how to pull it off. And maybe it's a, maybe Coach Wright during his years on Long Island there with Coach Spallina, he got some tips. So.
So after Villanova 2014, you take the head coaching job at St. Joe's Prep, which now I wish you had a better choice of taking a head coach job at a different high school than my arch rival, but we'll let that be. You led them to PCL title over my LaSalle Explorers, and you get to the state championship game at Hershey, but you came up short against your alma mater, Radnor, in the title game. So talk to me about that journey, and this was really your first year as a head coach in high school or college.
It was. And I love that you brought it up, because I do know, I can hear it in your voice that it pains you.
It's bad.
It was a lot of fun. It was a really, really unique opportunity to take over for Coach Greg at the prep. And he really, in a lot of ways, he left that cupboard full, right? We had a really, really good group of juniors and seniors, and some really talented young guys. And my job was not to go in there and turn things upside down. My job was just to give these guys some direction and give them a goal. And to and that obviously the goal was to win the Catholic League. And we worked every day and to get there. And it was an easy message, because those, like you said, right? It's an arch rival in everything, right? In football and hoops and lacrosse. And that was a lot of fun to be around. And I remember in the regular season, LaSalle kind of took it to us, and we were able to readjust a bit. We were able to kind of go back and, just figure out who we are in some ways. And we were able to get LaSalle in the championship game there. And then we made a nice run. Our guys bought into everything I asked of them. Like I said, it was a really talented group, so I just needed to give the direction, and they kind of took it. We had Dan Fisher at facing off, who ended up going to Villanova, and Marchese Michael in the net, who went to Notre Dame. And it was a really, really good group. And so I was really fortunate. And of course, the 1 year that I'm the head coach, we go to the championship game, and of course we got to play Radnor, and it was a great game, obviously overtime, and we came up a goal short, but that's going to happen. You do this long enough, it's going to happen. And so a really valuable year for me in a lot of ways. I made some great relationships. I think St. Joe's Prep is a really, really unique place. Being downtown, right in Philly there, and the kinds of kids that go there, I think it's an awesome place. And I left after a year, but there's I when you're there, I was like, look, I would love for my kid to go here one day. And that's the kind of place it is, and the kind of kids that go there. And I enjoyed that year quite a bit.
We talk about the recruiting process, and a lot of it we see the college coaches with their lawn chairs sitting at these recruiting events. But as a high school head coach, did that help you understand a little bit more about that recruiting process from a different angle, from the high school angle?
It did. It did. It kind of allowed me to see things, obviously from a different lens. And as I was working with some of the guys and trying to find a home, and It was kind of, I want to say, right at the peak of a little bit of the craziness in the lacrosse recruiting world, where, I was getting calls about my freshman, and I'm like, that guy's on JV, he's on JV. What are you calling me about for? But that I was on the other side of that phone call just a few months back, and so it really kind of opened my eyes to kind of the craziness and really the predicament that some coaches are in that are coaching high school, where it's like, I really like that guy, but he's on JV and because he's a freshman, and now you're asking me if you want to send him to school X, Y, or Z. You're like, I don't know. You kind of got to ask him. And so it was really, really enlightening, because sometimes when you're just in it and you're recruiting for Villanova and you don't even really think about what's going on at the other end from a dynamic perspective of what the team looks like and things like that. And so I did get a good idea of what it's like. And now I really value the high school coach's perspective. And I think that's one of the reasons we've been successful here at Cleveland State, is that we do a deep dive into guys, and we try to find the right guys, not just the best guys. And I value a high school coach's opinion, if they're willing to give it, or whether it's in an email or a phone call or a text, because they see that young man, whether it's they're in the school and it's on the day to day, or it's just on the practice field. They have a real good sense of what that kid's gonna like now and what his potential is in the future. And so it did really help in a lot of different ways. But it's something that I take with me now and think about a lot. Because I was getting those calls, and it was weird.
So you get a call from Coach Dylan Sheridan at Cleveland State, and you knew him from your time as an assistant coach with Thailand. He was a head coach for the national team in 2014. What was your first impressions of Coach Sheridan?
So I actually we first met. He was coaching at Lebanon Valley, I think that was, or I think he was at Ferrum, or
I
not
think you're right.
Ferrum.
It was Lebanon Valley. I think you're right.
He was at Pfeiffer, not Ferrum. He was at Pfeiffer before that, and so I can't remember the first summer we met, whether he was at Leval or Pfeiffer. But shortly after that, he ended up at Leval, and we were just at a tournament out in California, and we ended up being roommates. And he was, like he still is now, right? A very, very serious guy, but you get to know him, and he loosens up, and he's really smart, and he's really funny, and we kind of hit it off. And being Susquehanna and Leval, we were in Central PA. We played each other in their first year as a program, and then I went to Villanova. He went to Denver, and we saw each other in the 2011 NCAA tournament first round there out in Colorado. And Coach Sheridan's he's awesome. He knows what he wants, and he goes and gets it. And I give him a ton of credit for what he's done, here at Cleveland State. And but that's who Dylan is, right? He doesn't really take no for an answer. That's not who he is. And I was lucky to be able to learn under him here for a few years.
So you get the call, and what made you want to join him on this, once in a while opportunity where you're starting up or helping starting up a brand new program? And it is, we consider you a PA guy, Susquehanna coach, Villanova coach. The only really far trip you had as in your career for college really was when you went to Alfred in Western New York, and this was a 6-hour drive away from home. So what made you really want to join Cleveland State and Coach Sheridan starting up this program?
Yeah, look, that first phone call, I told him no way. My now wife is from New York City, and my parents are obviously still in Radnor and Wayne there. And I told him, I love you, man, but there's no chance. He was coaching at Princeton during that year, and we had got together a few times during the winter and hung out. And I just told him, look, I love you, but there's no chance I'm going to Cleveland. And he just basically told me to think about it. And he called me back, whenever, a couple of days later, and started just, wearing on me. And eventually I just said, let's do it. An opportunity to do something different. And I knew that if Dylan was going to leave Princeton, it was going to have to be for something pretty unique, pretty special, and something that he believed in. I don't think he leave the first assistant job at Princeton just for anything. You know, you look at guys that were at Princeton, you look at, you know, Coach Raymond up at, you know, head coach at Hobart, and you know, coach, he just went to Hobart with them.
Brundage.
Coach Brundy, you know, he went to Marquette, and so, you know, the guys that have been at Princeton, you know, they don't just leave for anything. They leave for, you know, for unique situations and ones they're excited about. And so, you know, Coach Sheridan wore me down. I said, let's do it. Let's go do something different. And I'm so happy we did. And such a unique opportunity to start something from the ground up. You know, we got out here, there was no cones, no balls, no nets. We wanted to have a prospect day that first fall, you know, and I remember Coach and I, you know, putting together goals, stringing up nets, and, you know, that's just what had to be done. And so much value came from those early years, and I'm so appreciative of them. You know, looking, you know, when we were going through it, it was hard to see, you know, hard to see a roster of 45 and us winning 8 games in year three. But he always had that vision, and I give him a lot of credit because he never wavered from it. And, you know, we now love Cleveland, right? This is our, you know, our second home in a lot of ways. This is home. And we have a house here. Our son was born here. So we're really happy. We're really thankful that, you know, he kept wearing on me, because at first I told him no way.
So you kind of mentioned it with like the whole trying to get a recruiting event or prospect day and trying to start up that 45 man roster. What was in your mind the toughest part about starting up that program? And you had to really sit out a year as a coach, and I guess you really wanted that fall of 2016 to just begin.
We did. And, you know, what we had to do was sell a dream to these young men and their families, because we couldn't sell them anything else, right? We had to sell them ourselves. We had to sell them on Cleveland State. We had to sell them on this dream of what Cleveland State lacrosse was going to look like, because we couldn't point to anything. We couldn't say this is what it's going to be. We just had to say, you come, you work hard, you do the right things on and off the field, and we'll get you there. And, you know, that's why I give those guys a lot of credit at that first class, you know, because they believed in us and they believed in that dream. And now here we are. But that first year, yeah, we kind of sat one out. And then once like January hits, February hits, everybody's in season, and, you know, your buddies don't really have time to catch up with you and just talk with you. And so, you know, Coach and I were, you know, just watching games and continuing to recruit. And we were fortunate enough, we were able to go see Coach Tiffany and his staff at Brown, and Coach Daly and his staff at Tufts. You know, we were able to spend a few days up there, and so much value in spending time with those guys. Obviously now they both have, you know, national championship rings, and, you know, it's those were the things that I remember from that spring was that trip and getting out and recruiting and going to see our guys we had committed, and just being excited about what was to come. But yeah, when you first start, all you want are your guys to come in. And then now all I want is my guys to come back, and get going here. And so, it was an interesting, you know, first 12, 15 months, getting this thing off the ground. But then once those guys rolled in, we hit the ground running, and it's been a lot of fun ever since.
So what was the biggest thing you learned from Coach Taylor, or Coach Tiffany, while you were up in that New England area for that trip?
Interesting question. You know, Coach Tiffany, obviously they were doing things a bit differently, at that point than what they had. And Coach Kerwin had come in from Tufts and taking some of the ideas of Coach Daly, and, you know, really we were watching some practice film, and just the idea of allowing guys to make mistakes and try to make plays. You know, so much of what we do can be pretty rigid, and you know, turnovers are seen as a negative and all that. And you watch some of those Brown practice films and you're like, they're literally throwing the ball all over the place. And then they're in the Final Four and they have Maryland on the ropes. And, you know, who knows if Dylan Malloy doesn't, you know, get hurt in the game before. They were as good as any team in the country. But part of that was that he allowed them just to play. And I think you see some of that in Virginia now, is that, you know, you just allow them to play. And when we were able to get to Tufts, you know, Coach Daly is obviously a football guy. And his whole thing was, we have to let these guys play because you're not on top of them during the games. And so don't blow your whistle every 4 seconds. And he said that about football. He's like, when I do football drills, you know, we do a rep every like 3 or 4 seconds. Well, this is lacrosse. It's more fluid. You can't do that. You got to change the way you're thinking. You got to let these guys, you know, make some mistakes and play faster. And obviously the success he was having at Tufts was speaking for itself. You know, so both of those guys, you just walked away going, that would be a lot of fun to play, you know, a lot of fun to play. And not every team can do that, right? Not every team is built like that, but you kind of put your whistle away for a bit. You let guys make some mistakes. You let them play through those mistakes and you come out the other end a bit better for it.
So back to you guys on the field, I mean, you guys really, I think, have exceeded expectations in years 1 through 3, and look no further to last year when you guys were 8-7. That's really, if you're looking at it, you're eligible for the NCAA tournament. Not a lot of teams can say that, especially in their third year of existence. So what's been really the one thing that's pushed this team to where they are right now?
That's a great question. The one thing that's pushed this team. You know, I really think some of that attitude that we took from those trips, you know, up to Brown and Tufts. I think if you look at it, our guys taking to it, you make a mistake, that's okay. You have to go make the next play. And, you know, this year we really bought into the riding thing. I think we led the country in riding. You know, you look at opponents' clearing percentage and, you know, really at the end of the day, right, if you're riding, it means that you either turn the ball over, you had a shot saved, or, you know, you didn't run one out, and, you know, that's okay. Go make the next play. And when we stopped worrying about every little mistake, we got better and guys played a little bit more free, a little bit more, just let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. Let's push the pace. Let's try to, you know, score some goals in transition. Let's push the ball off the faceoffs. And, you know, I was really, really proud of them for taking to that, because it's not easy, right? The first thing, right, a lot of guys do when they, you know, make a mistake or they throw the ball out of bounds, they put their head down. Oh, don't do that at Cleveland State, because, you know, you're going to come off the field, because here's the deal. You have to ride. You got to go get the ball back. And so creating those extra possessions, creating those extra opportunities for us was really, really helpful. You know, we don't play a lot of, you know, 7-8 goal games either way. We play a lot of tight games. And so those extra possessions are what's going to make the difference. And our guys bought into that in a big way. And given that effort, you know, whether it's the attackman riding, you know, our guys coming in at the midfield or the back end, you know, going to make a play, you know, we were all in with it. And, you know, that was a big reason for our success.
What type of student athlete or the DNA you're looking for to match this Cleveland State culture? What's your really pristine Cleveland State Viking?
The guy who's a bit overlooked with the chip on their shoulder, an excellent student. You know, we love guys that are able to do a little bit of everything, right? If you're doing well in the classroom, you're doing well on the field, the coaches speak highly of you. There's so much value there, in, you know, the guys that play a couple different sports that maybe don't play lacrosse all the time. You know, that's the kind of guys that we thrive on. You know, I look at, you know, some of our guys now, you know, starting defenseman, he played football in Minnesota. You know, he would barely play lacrosse and, you know, until the spring, you know, and that guy's awesome. He started a ton of games for us, Quinn Lemke. Michael Wilson, our starting attackman, right? He would much prefer, I think, to play hockey every day than play lacrosse. but the what he's picked up in other sports is really valuable. Noah Gleason was a really, really good basketball player at Dublin Kaufman down in Columbus. And so these guys that have really, really high ceilings, that are really, really good students, that are excited to continue to build something, that are excited to go to school in a city. It's unique. The challenges from going to school in a city are just different than going to a, you know, whether it's a smaller Division III school or even a school like Villanova. It's just different. You know, we're right in the mix, and guys got to be good with that and understand that, you know, there's things to do out there. But, you know, just like any other city school, like a St. Joe's or a Drexel or a Penn, right? It's city life. And sometimes guys aren't okay with that. But our guys need to be okay with that because that's what we are and that's who we are. And so I think as our guys have gotten older, they've appreciated what, you know, having all three sports teams within a mile, you know, of campus and having the House of Blues downtown and, you know, having the lake and all that kind of stuff. It's been pretty fun to see our guys grow from that perspective. But, you know, we get guys from all over the place. You know, we got guys from Colorado and California and Washington and Georgia and Texas and Florida. And it's been a lot of fun to see all these, you know, kind of like a melting pot in a lot of ways. You know, but these guys all have different backgrounds, but the one constant is great kids, great students, you know, really, really good lacrosse players. And we'll make them into great lacrosse players.
And now you're entering the fall of 2019. It's right now as a recording, August 19th, which, by the way, it's August is going by really quick for, I think, for at least myself, maybe even yourself too. But you're entering your first year as a head coach of this program, and it's still a little bit early, but how has the transition been from Coach Sheridan to yourself? And, you know, this brings up that my earlier question with between that transition from Coach Marks to Coach Corrado at Villanova.
It's been really good. It's been really good. Obviously, coaches and, you know, Coach Sheridan, he didn't go too far. And obviously, we're still very close, and, you know, he cares deeply about this program and the guys that are in it. And, you know, in a lot of ways, we're family. You know, we both had kids out here, and I think I've mentioned before, right? His wife was the only witness to my wife and I's wedding at the courthouse here in Cleveland. And so, you know, we are family. And so anytime I have a question, anytime something comes up, right, he's a phone call away, a text away. And so that's been really helpful because there have been things that have come up that either he had set up or planned or what have you that I just need some more insight on. But, you know, I think when we get out on the field, I don't think much is going to change. You know, I've been here since the start, and we go about things a certain way, right? There's a certain way the locker room is kept. There's a certain way that, you know, the field is set up at practice. There's a certain way we go about our business, and that won't change because that is what has made us successful. You know, and I don't need to be Coach Sheridan. I don't think that anybody has that expectation. But the things that have made us successful, we will continue to do. You know, like I said, we'll see here in a couple weeks with the transition. But, you know, our seniors have been here from the start as well. And so they know, you know, they've set the standard and they will maintain the standard and really continue to raise the bar. And so I'm excited. I just want him back. You know, I want him back. I want to get going. I want this thing to, you know, I want to be out on the field when the sun's rising in the morning and fall ball's going because, you know, that's where we're all most comfortable.
I want to go back to Coach Sheridan because I think one of the biggest things I've seen, at least on Twitter, and, you know, Twitter's not in real life, but he's been very supportive of Cleveland State, even with him going to Ohio State, which I think is really eye-popping to see because usually you don't see a lot of, you know, some coaches that use social media aren't really, you know, about they're really about their current program as well. But I think the big thing I've seen from Coach Sheridan, his support still with Cleveland State, and he still feels like he's part of the family, even though he's not with that program anymore. And I think it shows you what kind of culture that Cleveland State has and what he has built and how proud he is that he has built that Cleveland State program to where it is, and happy for you that you're carrying over that tradition and that culture right now. So in your mind, going to this year, what do you think will be the toughest task to accomplish in year four of this program?
The toughest task, you know, dealing with a senior class of guys that think they know it all. No, I don't know. The tasks will kind of ebb and flow. I think, you know, one of the obviously the toughest task for all of us, and it's been the toughest task every year, is not knowing, because we've never done it before, right? So not knowing what it's going to be like to have a class of seniors. And I joke that these guys know it all, but right, they've been around. They've done everything we've asked of them for, you know, going on 3+ years now. And so what it's going to be like to have seniors. And I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know what that is. And that's unique to Cleveland State. And, you know, to have over, you know, 20 seniors and then to bring in 13 freshmen, it's just a unique setup. And like I said, when we started, you know, it's just a different, every team's a bit different. And so, you know, the difficult thing for me is, you know, I don't know what that looks like now. And sometimes that can be tough because the unknown, but certainly something I'm excited to embrace as we get going here in a couple weeks.
So there are a couple of questions about the program right now. One of them is the second assistant, which hopefully will be sorted out in a little bit. But the big one, getting into conference, any word on that and what you guys are trying to do to get yourselves into a conference and have a chance to get that automatic qualifier and potentially a bid into the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, and so those conversations have been had, and you know, we are on our third athletic director since our time here, and Scott Garrett came from Kansas State, and he's been great. He's been very supportive. He understands what needs to be done, and he's doing the legwork to get us there. And he knows that it's not up to me, right? And we always kind of talk about, if it was up to us, you know, if it was up to the coaches, it'd already be done, just like everything else with the program. But it has to happen at a different level. And we have a new president. He's, I don't know, a little over a year in, but he came from Wharton. He lives outside the Philly area, I believe, in Villanova. And so he's very familiar with lacrosse. And we have a new deputy AD who started about a month ago, came from Ohio State. And so in my conversations with them, they all get it. They all understand. They all see the value that Cleveland State lacrosse has provided to the university. And they're going to do everything they can to market us to other conferences. And like I said, not market us to other coaches, but market us to the administrators and the ones that ultimately are making those decisions. You know, but in the meantime, right, we don't use it as a crutch. You know, we win every game we play. You know, we'll be in the NCAA tournament. And that's the way we approach things. There's no building, you know, to conference play. You know, our conference play starts on, you know, February 1st against Marquette. And if, you know, we're fortunate enough to win that game, then we go on to the next one, and our chances still remain at 100% to get into the tournament. And so our guys have never used it as a crutch. They never, you know, think about it. We just go about our business. And if we accomplish our goals, then we'll be playing in May.
Finally, at least for the Cleveland State portion, your goals for this upcoming season, and then even beyond, for building up this program even more?
The goals never change. We want to make the NCAA tournament. We want to play in May, and that's been the goal since day one. And I know our guys that are going into their senior year here, you know, believe in that goal and are willing to do the work, you know, to get us there. And you know, from a personal perspective, right, to give these guys that are our outgoing class, you know, really a year to remember, one that they can look back on and be proud of and have those fond memories. And they'll have a million memories, you know, from their time here, like every senior does. But to give them a year that they can really look back on and say, you know, 2020 was really, really special. And it meant a lot to me, meant a lot to my family, to be one of those first graduates. And you know, that's really what I want, is for them to leave this year and think, it was all worth it. It was all worth it.
And then a couple final questions. You're from the Philly area, and you should have some expertise in these two areas. Your favorite cheesesteak place, and then your favorite shore town.
I love it. Well, Shoretown was, you know, growing up, we'd spend a few weeks at Stone Harbor. Always enjoyed going down there, and you know, my brother and I, it felt like we would play rooftop mini golf for hours.
Oh, that's great. That's the best. That's
The
the best.
best, the absolute best. And you know, I don't know, you know, I guess you know, my folks would just give us, you know, a 20 and say, get away from me, and we would, and we would go play rooftop mini golf for what felt like forever. And I always wanted to, that last hole, the 19th hole, get it in the clown's mouth. And I don't know if I ever did it, but you know, that was always, you know, really fond memories of going down there. You know, Cheesesteak Place, there's, God, you know, that's a tough one. You know, being obviously a Western suburb guy, there was a place around the corner from my house called Mainline Pizza, and I could walk there, you know, with my 650, and it was awesome, and it's still there. And whenever I go home, I always like to grab a cheesesteak and you know, share one with my little guy now. It's just one of those local spots that's the best. And the best
I've
is
actually had that before.
there.
They're not that bad.
Yeah, there you go. And you know, not that bad. I'll take not that bad. You know, to me, I love it. You know, but it's you know, it's just one of those local spots, and you know, it feels like the same folks have been in there for years, and just love going in there. And you know, it was always the spot.
Personally, I'm a Steve's guy. I just love going to North Philly, the Northeast. Just very gritty area. Calmly rode, get in there, get a cheesesteak, whiz wit, and then just dart out. Sometimes I even, when I actually come back home, sometimes I would go either to Wawa, which is probably on the way there, or detour down to the Northeast to Steve's, and then go back up to work 4.5 hours later.
Have you found a spot up in Connecticut there?
I haven't really. Our ESPN Calf has some decent cheesesteaks, but they're not the ones from home. Still on the search for that. But I doubt I will find anything close to either Mainline or Steve's at
Yeah,
all.
I think there's a series to be had there, you know, trying to find that cheesesteak up in
By
Connecticut.
far. By far.
I think you can do something with that.
We need some that's some off-season content for next year for the site. By far.
I love it. I love
So,
it.
Coach, thank you so much for this, and it's great to have, you know, being great relations with a program like you guys. And we've had Dylan Sheridan on a few times, and even last year we had Danny Tesler, a really good Fogo, underrated Fogo, discuss his number change early in the season, which had a great story there that, you know, some people don't even know about. And it's great to have your story being brought up on this podcast, and especially bring some light on the Cleveland State program.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me, and you know, obviously hope to stay in touch throughout the fall, and then into the spring, because it's going to be a special year for the Vikes, and I'm excited to lead the ship here.
That is Coach Andy German. Coach, thank you for your time.
Thanks so much, Chris.